Welcome to Below the Line, where we talk about working in Hollywood from the crew perspective. My name is Skid. I'm a former assistant director and your host. Welcome back to season 19 of the podcast. Our Oscar coverage is now complete, and if you missed any of those episodes, I hope you'll go check them out. In the meantime, we're back to regular order here at Below the Line. We're talking about Sexy Beast, an eight-episode series that acts as a prequel to the 2000 Jonathan Glazer film of the same name. The Paramount Plus series aired its final episode on February 29th, and my guest today is Matthew Barber, ACE, who's credited as both producer and editor. Matt, welcome to Below the Line.
Hello. Hi, Skid. Thanks for having me on.
Matt, I'm glad you're here as well. A quick warning for listeners, today's conversation will contain spoilers for the show, so do go check those episodes out and then join us here. So, Matt, as I mentioned, you were both a producer and an editor. Talk to me about the circumstances that you got involved with this show.
Well, I came in on the show halfway through filming. They were actually about two-thirds of the way done with filming. And they needed some help in post-production to try to find the voice and the tone. And they were, kind of spinning in the port a little bit. I got a call, it was like right before Christmas, from Nicole Clemens, who runs the Paramount Studios. And she's like, have you seen Sexy Beast? I'm like, I actually have not. She goes, go home and watch it right away. And I took a look at it and I'm like, this is an incredible film. First of all, I'm surprised I've never seen it. But two, I'm like, how are they going to make this a TV series? So she sent me a lot of the rough cuts that they had. And I immediately started, like, my brain was like this beautiful mind kind of thing. I'm like, ooh, we could do this here. We could put this here. We can put this song and go here. And I created a little sort of a template for her, a little visual template. And I said, this is what I think we should do. And she goes, this is great. You got the job. So I sort of jumped on to like really help supervise the other editors. And I ended up getting pulled in pretty quickly to recutting the first episode. The editor, Nick Arthur's, left. And I took over and I just recut the whole first episode, created a template, and then sat with the other editors as they try to find some of that magic as well.
Well, Matt, tell me a little bit more about your background, because I can't imagine that the head of Paramount Plus is just grabbing a list of editors and starting to work down the list. So you've got some experience. You have a lot of experience in editing, it's fair to say, and some production experience as well. So talk to me a little bit about what your background is and made you ideal for this role.
Yeah, I've actually been fixing things since 2007. So I came on to this pilot, Human Target, and way back in the day on Fox, and they needed help with just like one little action sequence. They knew I was really good at like coming up with ideas, and it went with no notes. And then that sort of set me off on this path. And I became a regular fixer for Warner Brothers. And then eventually I got partnered up with Nikki Toscano, who was one of the showrunners on Hunters and The Offer, and one of my dear friends. And she brought me on to American Gigolo because they needed help. That's a Paramount Plus show. So I'd worked with Paramount Plus on The Offer. And then American Gigolo needed some help. And so I came in as a producer to try to oversee post. And it was such a success for them that they called Nikki up and said, hey, can you help out on Sexy Beast? And she was like, I'm busy, but grab Matt. So Nicole called me, and then I'm like, I'm not working, and it sounds daunting, but sure, let's do it.
Now, in watching Sexy Beast, and if folks go through, there are a lot of producers on the show. And so with your perspective coming from Below the Line, give a sense to our listeners what your role was compared to some of the other producers and kind of that whole ecosystem, how it fit together. And I'll say you've alluded to it. You came in to do some edit fixes and some solution stuff. But again, as I've always said, unless you actually see the producer doing their work, you can't tell just from the credits. Give us some insights into how it worked on this show.
Yeah. I mean, this show is a little different in that it was a UK-based production. So even though Paramount US was, was working on it, it was their show, Paramount UK was producing it. And so they have a little different system over there. Like the writers, like over here in the US, a lot of times a showrunner is the writer. In the UK, it's the writer writes and the producers produce, so they're sort of separate. So really, I sort of came in, and I was, because I have such a massive background in post, and I've worked with composers. I'm really good at music, and music is I have a music minor, so I always bring a lot of musical elements. I've worked a lot with visual effects, so a lot of my early editing and even directing, some of my early directing was very visual effects heavy sequences. So I was uniquely prepared to take on this role, which really was helping the entire post, the entire post team bring this home. So I hired the composer, I hired the main titles company, I worked with the visual effects team that was already in place to do the first pass on a lot of the first passes on these VFX sequences. Now we already had like an amazing production team and a set of producers that were there. I sort of just sort of slotted in and was like, okay, yes, I gave them some yeses and nos. So I just became like a I was a no, I was a link in the chain between Paramount and this the producers that were already there. And I sort of became the first line of like notes and shaping. Meanwhile, I was also working on the edit myself, and I was able to go. I basically was able to get everything into a beautiful little shape to where Nicole and the team at Paramount could take a look at it and go, "Oh, this is great. Here are some notes." Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, I think it does. I think that does kind of explain about you coming into the system that exists and how bringing that Paramount perspective to what they're doing and then sort of tying it into the original movie. I want to go back to that because as you mentioned that your assignment before you got the job was to watch the original film. And of course, folks who are following this, Jonathan Glazer is getting a lot of attention right now for his film, The Zone of Interest, which was well recognized at the Oscars. Give me a sense of what, in watching the film, what about that did you bring to the idea of the series and specifically that first episode?
Yeah, it was a unique it's a unique challenge. Anytime you take a series or a movie that's beloved and then beloved and turn it into a series, you're already stepping into big shoes, and you have a lot to not only do you have a lot to work with, but you also need to like make your own imprint. And we were not making a knockoff of the movie. This is it was its own thing. But for me, I felt like I really wanted it to feel like we were like distant cousins. Like it was a relation, but we weren't doing a twin. We weren't doing a knockoff. So that was sort of my marching order to everyone. Like, we need to find the elements that are we don't want to duplicate anything in the film. At the same time, we want to see like, oh yeah, we're in the zone. We're in the family. So for me, a lot of it was like the intensity and the pace was unrelenting in the film. The editing pattern was unique, because for me, I have a very elegant editing style. I'm like, you start with a nice beautiful shot, and you like maybe are in the medium shots and the wide shots for a little bit, and then there's a big shift that happens, whether or some subtext, and you go into a close-up and you sort of stay in there to create these moments. But with the movie, the film is like in close-ups like 70, 80, 90% of the time. Some scenes are just all close-ups, and it made it really unnerving. And I'm like, oh, this is really good. We want to keep some of this pace going. So I was really looking at trying to shape the edits and stay get into the close-ups as quickly as possible. Also, like, I don't know if you know this term, shoe leather. We have the shoe leather. Like, you have like, you walk into a scene, you say hello, 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 how are you doing? How are you doing? Would you have a drink? Sometimes you have those in shows, and it's beautiful. Other times it's like snooze fest. This film needed just was just so unrelenting. Like, a lot of that shoe leather was gone. It was just sometimes you just smash cut in the middle of something, and you're just like, where am I? You're disoriented, but it added this energy to it. So those were some of the elements that I really wanted to make sure that we captured. That this world is such a violent world, and everyone is like hanging on a thread, and there's so many lies and deceits and manipulations. I really wanted it to feel like it could fall apart at any moment.
Now, when you're expanding that idea, these themes from the movie into an 8-episode series, is there anything you need to do to, I don't know, sort of fill it out? Because again, the film was very intense. I think that would be hard to maintain for 8 episodes. And not necessarily that you even want to put people in that sort of pressure box for that length of time. But talk to me how you maintain that, what you have to bring to it fresh as an editor inspired by the film, but obviously another level of work.
Yeah, there is a lot of backstory. I mean, this in some ways, this whole series is backstory to the movie, right? But even within the linear timeline, there's a lot of flashbacks and a lot of contextualizing. And one of the things that we had to do was try to find the intercut that really worked. So there's a whole swath of the series where Gal and Didi, I mean, this is their love story. They're not together that much in the series. So we really wanted to feel like they were always connected. So sometimes we go like, okay, this scene is dragging. It's not really exciting. It's too much shoe leather, so to speak, or just, you know, people yammering. But what happens if we intercut Gal and Didi, what they're going through, find a nice song, and then all of a sudden it would come to life, because then it just felt like they were thinking about each other while they were doing their banal family stuff, you know? Or, you know, Gal is with Marge, his girlfriend, but really he's thinking he'd rather be with Didi, you know? So finding the right intercut was probably, you know, 90% of the work sometimes.
And so before we dive into your work on some specific scenes, were there other themes through the show that maybe a casual viewer might not recognize, but they would benefit if we pointed them out?
We really wanted to at least allude to and pay homage to some of the trippy scenes in the film. You know, there's like the bunny monster and the rabbit hunt that they're going on. So we didn't really have those elements. So we didn't want to knock it off, but we wanted to give like plant the seeds of those. Like, so a lot of what's going on, especially with the characters, a lot of the actors have talked about this, is that they want to find like the starting point for the characters how they ended up in the film. So they're different. They're different people, but there's also, you can see the seed and they'll grow into this. That's what we were trying to do editorially as well. So you'll see some, like, you know, on occasion, like little, like quick little flash cuts and you know, dream sequences to, you know, to rabbits and snakes and some of the more natural elements.
So Matt, you talked about being brought in to find a new energy for the show. I want to talk about a couple of specific scenes. Let's talk about the smash and grab at the arcade. There's the opening scene and the title sequence, and then we get right into it. Talk to me about what was on the page and then what you did with that as far as the edit process.
Yeah, initially there's a scene where they pull up in the car. In the original script, they go right from the rooftop to them smashing up the arcade. And also Don was far more violent in that scene. Like, he was unrelenting. And in the original edit, it was really visceral and really exciting, but it wasn't quite in line with who Gal was. Like, Gal is uncomfortable with violence and he always tries to talk his way out of things. And so we are really wrestling with, like, well, this is a really cool action sequence of what's going on with Don. Also, what's going on, we don't really understand who these guys are, because it just happens so fast. So in the edit, we said, hey, we need some kind of setup for these characters. So Alistair, who was doing our rewrites for us, he came in and wrote this beautiful scene of them pulling up in the car, just a quick, quiet moment of like naming all the characters, setting us up. And then we go into the smash and grab. And at that point, we're like, we really want to make sure that we preserve Gal's character throughout this whole, like, the integrity of his character has to hold sound. So, and we also want to show how crazy violent Don can get. So we really cut that sequence down. I mean, we probably did 10 or 15 edits of it till we got just right, just the right amount of violence to say, you know, for the boys to get what they want to get, this information of this safe to the combo safe, you know, combo to the safe. At the same time, preserve Gal as someone who's like, he's just there for the money. He's there for, you know, to right the power disparities, but he's not there to hurt people.
And so that's an interesting. So the original approach, one might even say, was more inspired by the movie, whether back or forward in time, but that sort of idea of the original characters. But through the edit and some rewrites, you're able to walk that back in order to set a pace for us over the next 8 episodes of what these characters are going to become.
Yeah, and whenever you're on the first episode of a show, like it really is a precarious balance of keeping the energy going, keeping it fun or engaging, whatever you're going for, while at the same time making sure everyone latches on to the information that they need to latch on to. And that really is where editing really comes in and can make or break a show. You know, you obviously you could you can't you you can only polish, you know, shit, you know, so much before, you know, just it's bronze. It's not, you can't really make gold, but you can help things land. You can add energy, you can make things more fun, or you can kill the energy through the edit. So a lot of times what I'm doing is, you know, it's essentially like sometimes like a conductor does. Like I may not be acting, I may not be composing, you know, but I'm sitting there going like, okay, we need to slow down here, we need to speed up here. Ooh, we need an oboe here. Like, you know, then I call the people and say, hey, you know, one of the other producers or the creator or the writer would be like, is there any way we can get an oboe? And they're like, oh yeah, an oboe would be cool, you know. So
Well, when you talk about slowing down, that's the next scene I wanted to ask you about. Because later on in that first episode, soon after that, maybe about 9, 10 minutes in, following the heist, we go to Gao. There's a scene where he's in the mirror at home. There's some flashbacks. Talk to me about that scene overall. And then once again, what you started with and what you were trying to communicate through the edit.
sure. Initially, all we had was like this establishing shot of Gal's house. We meet Marjorie, his girlfriend, and she's just, you know, talking about the wedding and all and life and everything. And then we find Gal, you know, recovering from his meeting Dee Dee the night before. There was a problem though. It was a beautiful shot what they did, and it was really painting the complexity of who Gal was through his stuff. But one, we didn't know Dee Dee well enough to really understand that this woman on the couch wasn't Dee Dee. You know, we're just like, oh, is she wearing a wig? What did he bring her home? What's going on? And at the same time, we were missing that Gal's life was changed forever because he met the woman of his dreams at the club the night before. So what I pitched was like, we need to find a close-up. We need to reshoot him in the mirror, getting ready, listening. We can hear Marjorie in the distance, but it's all about Gal. You know, and a lot of times, like, I mean, a good director will know where to center, will know where to center a scene, and it will be easy. But sometimes, you know, directors won't always know, you know, or they won't be clear where they want to center the scene, and so they'll just shoot a lot of stuff, and then you have to kind of make it happen in post-production. So a lot of times, what I'm always asking is like, who is this scene about? Who is this moment about? And how can we center that character, you know, or the edit around that thing? Do I always get it right? No. Sometimes, you know, the director or writer will come and say, actually, I want to center it around this person for this reason. I'm like, oh, great, awesome. We'll flip this whole thing around. But for anyone out there who's like, you know, wants to become a director, it's like, you know, always come in with a point of view and say like, this moment here, this should be around Gal. So that's essentially what I did at that moment. It was like, make this about Gal, and then we can have some flashbacks and we can set the mood and make it moody and go, oh, he's entrenched. Meanwhile, his fiance is in the other room. Like, oh shit, that's complicated.
Well, Matt, I would nerd out with you maybe every scene in this episode, but in the interest of, and you know, where our audience let them discover some stuff for themselves, I do want to jump ahead to the last episode where you said you also came back in as the principal editor. Talk to me about the heist we've been building up to for the entire series, and it really kicks off episode 8.
Yeah, and I co-edited that with Paul Knight. So, and Paul Knight is a fantastic editor, and he was tasked with cutting both episodes 7 and 8 at the same time. And it just became too much work, so I came in to really help him, especially with that heist sequence. And the whole series, Nicole really wanted us to find a place for the kinks, and we have like one of our actors has a connection with the Kinks. So we're just, all right. I was trying to find a place. Nothing was sticking. And she asked me every episode, did you find a place for the Kinks? I'm like, no. But I
And maybe we should clarify for some of our audience that might not know, we're talking about the musical band, the Kinks. So
the
just to, people aren't wondering, it's not some film term we're using. We're talking about the band.
Yeah, exactly. But I heard I I I I would often like take a walk. I live up in Portland now. I moved up here, a couple of years ago. And it's so much green space. I just go out and walk and listen to music, and I just catalog songs that would capture gals' headspace. And I heard Met a Girl, and I'm like, this could be interesting. Maybe instead of having like this, action song or techno driving, score, what if we open up with Gal just not like just in this heist? He's bleeding out. He wants to be in Spain with the girl he loves. That's all he's thinking about. This song is perfect. So I really fought for it, and I cut the whole beginning sequence to that song. And there was some resistance initially because everyone, I think, really wanted to be like this hard driving, score. But I really, really fought for it because I think it really sort of set us in the right headspace of this whole show is a love story. It's not about the heist. It's not about the violence. It really is about a love story set in that world. And so after that, it was like then trying to find all the right pieces to intercut. There's so much intercutting, so many stories moving around, so many. And at the same time, we had such little time on, like, if you look really closely at the actual, mansion, at the estate, the palace, you're going to see a lot of the rooms are like the same rooms on repeat. We just kind of flip things and cut things, just because we didn't have enough time to like really shoot all the rooms, but we had to make it feel massive and expansive. And so from the heist, we got to the second half of the show. Really, you have the first half is the heist, the second half is the wrap up. And there are a number of endings, spoiler alert. It's like, Lord of the Rings sometimes, so many freaking endings. But this is where it was a really interesting balance between Nicole and I, Nicole Clemens at Paramount. And I really fought to have the back half really intercut the way we've been doing the whole series. These two characters intercut, these three characters intercut, and just this keeping up this drive and this pace. But she really wanted to feel all the moments. Feel all the characters, feel all the scenes. And I was really resistant to it. I kept trying to like crack it. I'm like, I know I need to find the right intercut that'll make this work. And me and Paul, the other editor, was like, we've just tried everything. And Nicole just kept saying, no, I just want to, I think at this point we've earned the right to just like slow down. So we kept it pretty linear. Like, there aren't a lot of intercuts. There are a few, but we really pulled back on it and just let the scenes play. So that's like an example of sometimes it doesn't matter how much I like something. This is a collaborative business. So I think for any position, like sometimes like I really like an edit or I really like a camera setup or whatever, and there's someone up the chain who's like, no, I want it to be this. So I still try to find some magic and love, and then I have to fall in love with that new structure.
Well, Matt, I want to bring it back around to the beginning. We talked about you getting the assignment to go watch the 2000 film. I also went back and watched the 2000 film before I sat down to watch the series. Do we think that's really important for people to do? I mean, again, there are layers that I got from that, but do people need to watch the film to see where we're going with this?
No, you don't have to watch the film. In fact, it may serve you to wait to watch it. They are different things, and there's no information in the film. Like the film itself, there wasn't much backstory. It alludes a little bit. There's a few little like Easter eggs in there that we like. We just a little seed that we expanded on. And we made like a meal out of. But for the most part, they're their own things.
Without spoiling all the specifics, the series does not exactly zip right up to the film, so there's space there for more story to be told. What can you tell us about a second season?
Well, there's not much to say. Like Alistair is riding away right now, and I don't know much. I know like Gal and Dee Dee are back. I know Don's back. I know Teddy is back. So I know who's back. There's one character who may or may not be back. I do not know yet, and I'm not going to say anything.
All right, Matt, like any good heist, you're keeping the details close to your chest. I totally get it. We will be watching for it, though, and look forward to following up when we know more. But on that note, we'll call it a wrap. Matt, it was really great having you here.
Thanks, Skid. Thanks for having me on.
Listeners, I always appreciate your feedback. You can find my contact info at our website, blowtheline1word.biz. That's B-I-Z. You'll also find past episodes, including the before-mentioned Oscar series, where subject matter experts talking about the technical categories. You should check that out if you're not aware. You'll also find links to our social media. So again, check us out at the website. So Matt, where else can listeners go to check out your work?
I have a bunch of things up on Vimeo. I don't have a great direct link, but you can also check out my IMDb. MatthewBarberAce.com has some stuff. And my new show is going to be out on Peacock sometime next year. It's called Long Bright River. It's Long Bright River. No, my next series is Long Bright River. It's going to be on Peacock. And I'm one of the editors on the series.
All right, well, watch for that. Matt, this was fun.
Thanks.
My closing credits, thanks to Curtis Five for our music, John Wan for our logo, and to all of our listeners, I appreciate you. Please rate us wherever you get your podcast and tell your friends. Thanks again from Below the Line.